Hi guys, Annie here. Before we head into this episode, I just wanted to note that we actually recorded this one about a month ago. So while we don't typically mention current events during the pod, you may notice a particular lack of acknowledgement of the events that have occurred since then, including the death of George Floyd, among many others, and the ensuing Black Lives Matter protests. If you would like to hear some recommendations of books by Black, Indigenous, and people of color, please check out the bonus episode we released last week. Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I'm Annie.
And I'm Jessie.
And today we are talking chapters 36 through 40 of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
I think we've like hit an impasse here. Like the winds of change.
Such a huge turn from the last time where it seemed like all this stuff was happening.
Mm-hmm. It's a more quiet contemplation.
So much contemplation. We were talking about Darcy being very cerebral and all his overthinking, but little did we know what was coming for us.
I know. It's funny because when I was reading Elizabeth's thoughts, like as she was reading the letter, they like mirrored our own like conversation about it.
That was helpful and kind of nice. It means that we're like all in the same vibe, I think. But
yeah.
Before we get into that, Jesse, what have you been reading, watching?
Yes. So, you know, we've discussed previously how this time is like hard for some people to sort of latch on to certain types of media and how hard it is maybe to like focus on books and that sort of thing. And so I'm lucky because I have been able to find stuff that I want to read, but I've been like picking up stuff and putting down things a little bit more than usual. Like stuff that I've been on hold at the library for months, like will come up on my holds, and then I'll read like two chapters and be like, I don't know if I like am ready for this or if this is something that I want to read.
You're a big believer in not forcing people to in not forcing yourself to read something that you're not feeling, though.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen a lot for me. Like I think there's like been one book in the past year before, like up until a couple months ago, that I started and wasn't able to finish. But it's been a few books for me the past few months, or the past few weeks, I guess. But something that I've had on my shelf that I bought when it was released was Michelle Obama's book, Becoming. Hmm. And I don't remember when I bought it. I don't remember what like crossed my mind other than like, oh, I like this person. Like I want to support her, you know, because she really needed my like $25 or whatever. But I bought her book and it just sort of sat on my shelf next to all the like where my nonfiction section of my little library. And I don't know what convinced me to pick it up, but something said to me like, this, pick it up, read this now. And I ended up really liking it. She's just a fantastic writer and her story is really great. You know, she starts the book talking about when she was a young girl growing up in the South Side of Chicago and then, you know, going to an Ivy League university and Ivy League law school. Having like a big firm job, like right in downtown Chicago, and then meeting her husband, obviously, and all that stuff. And then, you know, being first lady. And yeah, I'm from Chicago too. I mean, we had a different sort of upbringing, but I worked in big law also, and sort of following her journey through that was something that I actually really needed at this time in my life. Mm-hmm. And when she meets Barack and they have this little like love story, she talks about him courting her and their first date and him proposing, and it's a very lovely romance too, which I wasn't really expecting. And I like to consider myself a connoisseur of the romance novel, and this was one of my favorite romances that I've read all year, so it was just really lovely to read from that perspective. You know, they're just like people like us mostly. And I know she gives a lot of like really interesting personal anecdotes without revealing like too much, so I feel like we're getting like inside our head, but it's not too much information, you know, it's not like mm-hmm. an overshare, like it's just like the perfect amount. And I felt really inspired after finishing it, and yeah, I definitely recommend it. I'm glad I read it. I mean, I feel like a couple years ago, like everyone read it. And mm-hmm. there's a on Netflix, there's a special sort of documenting the book tour that she went on. So it's sort of like a timely time to have read the book so you can re-watch the series, I guess. But it was like sort of the perfect thing that I needed to read, sort of found me, and it was like sitting on my shelf the whole time. So I highly recommend the book, and I recommend, like, even if you're not into politics, like, it really isn't about politics, really. Like, it's just about people who care and her life story, and it's fascinating. And I also recommend, like, using your bookshelf as a library, because I know that people might not feel comfortable going to libraries. Your library might not be open, and highly recommend.
No, I actually did start that book when it first came out, but I think I was still too emotionally distraught to deal with it. So I made it a third of the way in. And I actually went to, I got to see her speak in New York, and my friend got to meet her on the book tour, and she was crying. I couldn't go in because I wasn't able to get tickets for myself, but I just watched everyone coming down the elevator from the floor she was on, and just everyone full of tears. It was kind of amazing.
Oh yeah, I could definitely see this, yeah, maybe being like really emotional to read, like right after, like right when it came out, which was I think like 2017 ish.
Yeah, we were all still pretty fresh on some changes in life in the world. Did we know what was coming for us.
But this book, like, it sort of just found me when it needed to, like, dealing with like career stuff, you know, like I'm a lawyer and I worked at a big firm as well. And she made that transition to a more like public interest field. And I haven't done that, but I've like thought about it. And it was really inspiring and really something good for me to have read at this point. So it sort of found me when it needed it, when it needed to. So I recommend finishing it, but maybe when you're like ready, like it'll find you.
Emotionally ready. It's kind of great when books do that. I don't know if you've had a chance, but I do recommend also the movie South Side with you. It's an incredibly low-key movie. It's essentially the Obamas' first date together. It's so low stakes on paper, but kind of it's a really kind of amazing, but also very sweet and romantic film. Looking at these two young professionals in the midst of, and like you said, it's not like necessarily a political thing. I mean, regardless of what your affiliation is, the two of them go on this remarkable journey, like professionally and personally, in so little time. And you can, it's like a glimpse at the very beginning of all of that. And it's just a really sweet film. It's these two young people, and like the biggest conflict is on whether or not it's actually a date. And the whole time he's like, it's a date, right? I mean, we went to get some ice cream. It's a date. And she's just like, yeah, no, it's not a date.
Yeah, the ice cream. She talks about that in her book. That's so funny.
It's so funny because the whole time he's like, it's a date. She's like, look, I'm the only black woman at our firm. I'm not going to be dating the only black man at the firm, no matter how cute he is. And he's just like, you think I'm cute? It's precious. I highly recommend
it. Because she's like, I mean, he's older than her, but he like went to law school later. So she's like higher, more senior at the firm. And she's his like mentor. And like, it's never frowned upon, as far as I can tell, but it's like I could see why she would be like hesitant to go out with him, and
she's very aware of the optics.
Yeah, it's like he's never gonna like work at this big law firm. Like, I think it's like kind of like unsaid that he's like summering there, but he's like never actually gonna like this guy is never gonna work at this firm. Like, he's meant for so much else. So
he's got his mind on other horizons. Yeah. speaking of two lawyers working at a firm with an older woman and some awareness of racial politics, weirdly.
Oh my God. I was like, what?
No, weirdly, the book that I mentioned last time I was reading called If I Never Met You by Verry McFarlane about the fake relationship. And it didn't take that long for me to discover that the main characters were all lawyers working at this law firm. And one guy is just known as some notorious womanizer. And she's like the goody girl who, you know, has been with her boyfriend since her first year in college, 18 years later. And they agree to like have a fake romance to get him his promotion and get her revenge on her boyfriend who leaves her for another woman that he got pregnant. It's fine. Okay. It's enjoyable. It's a very easy read, maybe like a 3 out of 5 star situation. Yeah, that's kind of all I got. It was just enjoyable. It's a protagonist who sort of discovers her own power, had nothing to do with the man she was with, and a male love interest who is very inclined to try and avoid the usual traps of toxic masculinity. So, hey, nice time.
Okay. That has like so many of like the best tropes that I love in like in books and like romance and fiction. Yeah.
It's incredibly reliable if that's what you're looking for right now. Mm-hmm. Little concerning about this white female author writing a character from a mixed race perspective. I won't get into it just because like I don't know if that's necessarily my place to discuss it, but it's just something to be aware of. And what else? I have also started a book called Sin Eater. I think it came out last month by Megan Campisi. It is very early on in it. It's kind of interesting. Weirdly, it reminds me of like a grown-up tone of this book I read as a kid called Catherine Called Birdie by Karen Cushman, which I loved because it's in kind of medieval times. There was a review by Amanda Nelson on her Instagram. It says, alternate Elizabethan England, but make it feminist murder mystery with a Les Mis hat on. And how could I not pick that up? So looking forward to see where that's going.
Cool. I like the title. It's a good title. Sin Eater.
It is. I feel like there have been a couple books about similar, about characters in a similar role, but I've never gotten into it before. So here we are.
Cool. It sounds really good.
Mm-hmm. So back to Pride and Prejudice.
Back to Pride and Prejudice. Right.
Why don't you review us on what happened before the chapters that we're talking about today?
Okay, sounds good. What began as an obligatory trip to visit her newly married friend, Charlotte, became quite the whirlwind for our sassy Bennett protagonist. Elizabeth finds herself continually invited to Rosings and forced to face veiled critiques from the esteemed Lady Catherine. Luckily, Elizabeth finds her attentions diverted to the male guests at Rosings. Colonel Fitzwilliam is a delightful company, and even the elusive Mr. Darcy found time in his schedule to praise her piano playing and let her tease him for his horrid behavior when he stayed around them in Meryton. Elizabeth also finds herself frequently running into these men when she takes her frequent walks on the property, and on one such walk, she finds herself in the company of Fitzwilliam, who lets her know that Darcy prides himself on separating not only then her sister from the company of Mr. Bingley. Elizabeth is horrified and barely has time to process that information when who should show up but Darcy himself. He proposes to an astounded Elizabeth in one of the most unromantic proposals of all time, which also includes insulting her entire family. Elizabeth turns him down and accuses him of betraying Wickham. Rejected and with his feelings hurt, Darcy returns the next day with a lengthy letter explaining his actions to Elizabeth, as well as claiming that our amiable friend, Mr. Wickham, is actually quite the scoundrel and even tried to run off with Darcy's 15-year-old sister for her money. And that's where we left ourselves last time.
On this complete and utter bombshell. Two bombshells. It's a two-part bombshell.
Two-part bombshell.
Yeah, so it was funny that we talked about how our little divisions of chapters just happened to end like right after the revelations, but none of the fallout, which is what we started covering in these chapters. So
yeah, so what happened? Andy's gonna let us know what happened in the chapters that we read for today.
All right, so Elizabeth spends hours reading and rereading and re-rereading Darcy's letter, at first unable to accept any of it. Not the part about separating Jane and Bingley due to Jane's indifference and family's impropriety, but also the story about Wickham and Darcy's sister. But the more she reviews it, the more it makes sense, and if she accepts that part about Wickham, she has to believe him on Bingley, too. It isn't easy admitting she was wrong about him and Wickham, but Elizabeth slowly accepts it and the fact that she may never see Darcy again after she insulted him. Which is fine, though, because she's so embarrassed, she's in no rush for another encounter. It's also time for Elizabeth and Mariah to go back home, which Lady Catherine, of course, has many opinions on the whens and the hows, and Mr. Collins wishes her a nice goodbye as nicely as he possibly can, hoping that she finds a marriage as happy as Charlotte's. And Elizabeth can see that her good friend was content enough in her life, and you know what they call that? Growth. On the way home, Elizabeth meets with Jane and then Kitty and Lydia. She doesn't spill the tea on Darcy and Wickham and Bingley just yet, in no small thanks to Lydia, who can't stop talking about men, including George Wickham, and getting married before she's too old at 23, like Jane. It's a relief to Elizabeth to finally return home and where they're welcomed by their parents. And finally, she tells Jane about the proposal and about what really happened between Darcy and Wickham. The two of them agree not to spread the hot goss around to protect Darcy's sister, and because people are so biased against Darcy, anyways, the truth will out, they believe, and one day they'll laugh all about it. Yeah, not a lot happens.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but Elizabeth's journey right after she finishes reading the letter is sort of the journey that Annie and I took last episode, going through almost like line by line with Darcy's letter. just like, can I believe this? Like, this can't be true. Like, should I believe this? But wait, like, here's some other fact. And it's kind of incredible the journey that she takes in that chapter after she finishes reading the letter. That's sort of the juiciest part of this hunk of chapters, I feel.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, half the time you expect the way Austen tends to approach emotional journeys, very succinct, very perfunctory, not like real in depth, but she really dives into this, which I kind of love. Because at first she's like, nope, I don't want to believe it. That's terrible. I don't like that. He's not repentant enough about Jane, and none of that makes sense, and I don't buy it. And then she just keeps rereading it. And then she takes like her 2-hour long walk. She can't stop thinking about it. She keeps pulling it out and opening it. Like, I wonder how many times she actually reads this letter. And at first she sort of dismisses the whole Bingley stuff. She's like, whatever, he's being a jerk. There's nothing to that. So she just focuses on the Wickham
thing. There's no way. Yeah, there's no way he could possibly think that. This has to be false.
Yeah,
he's wrong. And she's like, biased. Yeah.
He's wrong. And he hurt my Jane. And he's not sorry enough. He needs to be more sorry, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But we go into the Wickham stuff. How? I don't even know how to approach this.
Well, I like, so my favorite part about her, because it's very logical the way she like parses it all out. And I really like sort of the progression that she goes through with the Wickham stuff, because she, at first she's like very mad about it, because I think that it goes to what the book is trying to tell us about prejudice, right? Like, she had a way that she viewed Wickham, and it's hard to see the way that you, like, you pride yourself on being a good judge of character, like we know Elizabeth does. It's like part of her personality.
Mm-hmm. She likes being smart and right. Yeah.
And so it's hard when you're faced with this narrative that contradicts basically everything that you thought about someone. So she sort of starts to go back, but every line proved more clearly that the affair, which she had believed it impossible that any contrivance could so represent as to render Mr. Darcy's conduct in it less than infamous, was capable of a turn that must make him entirely blameless throughout the whole affair. And she tries to go back in her mind and remember, like, what she liked about Wickham. And all she remembers is that his voice was nice. His manner was nice. It, like, and then she's like, she tried to recollect some instances of goodness, some distinguished trait of integrity or benevolence that might rescue him from the attacks of Mr. Darcy, but no such recollection befriended her. She could remember no more substantial good than the general approbation of the neighborhood and the regard with which his social powers have gamed him in the mess. So basically, once she gets over her initial defensiveness, she's able to look back and sort of reevaluate and think, well, has he ever done anything good? Like, he just looked good. He sounded good. And, like, people liked him because he seemed good. But, like, did he actually ever do anything? And then she starts reevaluating, going backwards and realizing the same stuff that we brought up, right? That he said, she remembered he had boasted of having no fear of seeing Mr. Darcy, yet he avoided the Netherfield ball the very next week. She also remembered that till the Netherfield family had quitted the country, he had told his story to no one but herself, but after the removal, it was everywhere discussed. And then she's able to look back on his attentions to Miss King, which seemed like she'd sort of laughed off at first, but now they seem really mercenary, which is the word that she used. So I really like I think the thought process you're able to follow with the Wickham part of the letter and Elizabeth's reaction to it is really methodical after she gets over the first like hurdle. And it's really thoughtful. And I really like it because mm-hmm. I think a lesser author would just either have her protagonist completely like brush it all away or like immediately believe it. But instead we're brought through like the entire logical thought process and the clues that have been dropped like along the way. Mm-hmm. That's my thesis on it.
No, yeah. It's amazing how much emotional work she puts into this. Because I mean, it must be so difficult to have to be the person like in film or screen adaptation to have to somehow portray all of this in a moment, in a look, in a gesture. Mm-hmm. But here it is. We get to actually go on the journey with her, with Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's great the way that she does characterize just the complexity of all of it. And it's not going to be easy, especially for someone who is so proud of her ability to think so clearly and finding out that, nope, it's all wrong. It's all based on false information. And I love the characterization that it's not like, not only did he do a bad thing, he also doesn't have these redeeming things that, well, not should, that could possibly be some kind of mitigating factor in it. I really love that that's part of how she saw him, that she has to face the fact that like, she was just charmed by a good looking dude who was really charismatic and knew how to like get people on his side. He's just kind of almost like a really good politician, but with no soul, which might be redundant to some people, but.
No, she's really introspective about it in a way that I think shows a lot of growth. When she says, you know, had I been in love, I could not have been more wretchedly blind, but vanity, not love, has been my folly. Like, I courted presupposition and ignorance and driven away reason where either were concerned. Like, she recognizes in herself that she was blind, partial, prejudiced, and absurd. Like, she didn't like Darcy because he was rude. He blew her off at a party. Like, she has reason to not like Darcy. It's not like she was like, oh, he's proud. Like, look at his face. Like, he like insulted her at this party. So she has reason to not like him and to be prejudiced against him. And here comes Wickham, who's just handsome and like showing her attention, and he tells her this story, and she's like, sure, like, why wouldn't I believe him? Like, this guy's like a jerk. And now that she's faced with sort of all the facts and she's able to put all these puzzle pieces together, she believes Darcy, but she also sort of turns it on herself, and she realizes that it was sort of her own prejudice, to borrow a phrase from the book's title, that caused her to just like readily believe Wickham. And she just feels really bad. And I think it's a moment of growth for her to recognize that. And it feels like a turning point, like we keep talking about.
And just to bring it back to an email we got last week, I believe Tiffany was the one who said that, like, she thinks a part of the appeal of Wickham was that everything he had to say also bolstered the idea she had initially had of Darcy. So, like, she can latch onto that, and it kind of helps that, you know, she didn't have to question it. It just helped make the case that she already believed. And she, like, we've said so many times before, she likes being right, and now she had more evidence to it. But now she has to sort of relitigate all that and not only look back on her feelings of Darcy, but also on Wickham and then on herself. And that's an incredibly uncomfortable position to be in. No one likes having to look back and think, oh no, I was wrong about a lot of things.
Yeah, and she has to look back and say, well, why was he even interested in me? You know, like, and she has this really rational thought that, like, he either thought I had more money than I did, or he was just enjoying, like, making himself feel better that this, like, pretty girl found him interesting. Like, she's able to, like, she's not only, like, really rational and pragmatic about it, but she takes further steps back. It's like, well, why does he even like me in the first place? Like, I don't even know if I would have the, like, introspection or ability to take that further step back and be like, wow, this guy's a jerk. She's like, not only is he a jerk, these are the reasons that he even talked to me in the first place.
The man wanted an audience, and he certainly got one. He not only with her, with like all of Hertfordshire.
Yeah, no, the whole, like, he was able to charm like the whole town, and really it's just because he was like handsome and nobody liked Darcy.
That certainly helped. And at some point, she was thinking about that first time we met and how he's like, "No, I'm just Wickham, and I don't want to talk about, why I don't like Darcy, but like, here's everything that happened." And Elizabeth was now struck with the impropriety of such communications to a stranger and wondered if it had escaped her before. I'm like, "Girl, of course it did. You were too busy being all about that face."
She was Twitter pated.
I
Do
mean,
people still say
we've all been
that?
there.
It's really, yeah. No, it's true. You can't blame her. I mean, she definitely blames herself a lot more than I think she needs to here. Like, she's like very upset with herself. But like, it is relatable. Like, to like believe this like handsome dude, and it's not like Darcy was that great, so.
He was just so good looking, she never really bothered to inquire more about his past or who he is as a person. And sometimes that just happens when you're like, no, the package is enough. Thank you. Just keep it here.
And the progression here is really genius because we have first in Darcy's letter, he talks about Jane and Bingley, and that riles Elizabeth up right away because she's like, absolutely not, Jane. Like, an idiot could have seen that they were meant to be together and blah, blah. And then she goes into the Wickham stuff and then goes through her mental gymnastics with the Wickham stuff to come out the other end and realize that Darcy is right. Darcy would have never shared this personal anecdote if it wasn't true. Like, why would you besmirch your sister's name, who you obviously love? Like, she knows how much he loves her, even though she doesn't like that much about him. She knows that he cares about his sister. So once she reaches that point with Darcy, she's able to go back and reevaluate the Jane stuff as well. And then she feels even worse because she realizes that, yeah, Charlotte had come up to her and said, does Jane even really like him that much? And Elizabeth had blown her aside, like, no, they clearly love each other. So she remembers that even Charlotte had mentioned it, and then she goes back and she realizes that, yeah, her family was kind of improper at the ball. Like, she could, and then she starts
Incredibly
to be able to,
embarrassing.
yeah, she like begins to see Darcy's point of view, and that's why the per like I really love this chapter so much. You really go through that journey with her, and you come around in a really organic way.
And if she's to believe the story about Wickham, if she's to believe everything about Jane and Bingley, because it's not just, oh, it makes sense, but also corroborated in the past by someone else she also trusts, by Charlotte, she has to come around to the fact that, like, literally all the people who are so loyal to Darcy and saying that he's actually a really good dude, he's, what all these things that you can't seem to believe that he is those things. Like, was it with what Bingley said about Darcy through Jane? She realized that she had never seen anything that betrayed him to be unprincipled or unjust, anything that spoke of him irreligious or immoral of habits, that among his own connections he was esteemed and valued, that even Wickham had allowed him merit as a brother, and that he had often heard him speak so affectionately of his sister as to prove himself capable of some amiable feelings. That even that it had to be true. Even if Wickham said it, and that if someone like Bingley could be his friend, she couldn't. It's like it's completely implausible to believe that if Darcy had done what Wickham said he had done, it would have been so out of character and so scandalous, everyone would have known about
Yeah,
it.
and Fitzwilliam too.
Yes, and Fitzwilliam, who also like kind of laid some groundwork beforehand of this is some stuff that happened, and she could fit the pieces together. So it's like she has to just really look at herself and how she judged him, and like for his rudeness and his awkwardness and his what's the word, compliance to like social, what's socially acceptable among the different classes. She has to acknowledge that, like, no, he's literally given no hint whatsoever that he's a liar or that he would make something up or that he would actually be really petty and malicious against someone.
No, the journey is really well done. It's just so good. Because I when you first like read the letter from Elizabeth's point of view, like why would she believe any of this? He could just be like lying. But when you walk through it logically, like Austin had spread the clues in there. You have Charlotte second guessing Jane, you have the Miss King stuff, you have a lot of clues in there that Elizabeth just like wasn't willing to look at that we've mentioned before on the podcast, but you have it all sort of like laid out, and now we have the sort of the final piece of the puzzle, this stuff about Georgiana, his sister, and you can start, and then you put all the pieces together and you're like, wow, okay, I can see I can see why Darcy would have done this. I can see why he would have been a jerk here. It doesn't fully absolve him, and he still, like, does a bunch of, like, shady stuff. But Wickham is, like, clearly the bigger, like, jerk in this story.
It's kind of a mess. It's just looking at all these things that she has to go through to reconcile what she learned with what she believed and what's actually true. It's kind of amazing that this letter and this story, that everything got set up in a way when the truth is revealed, it still makes sense and all still comes together. But at the same time, everything is different.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, I did some like supplemental like reading, and one of the critiques of this moment is a lot of people, or some people maintain that this letter is unrealistic, that a man who's so proud and reserved would never reveal so many details of his private life. Like, some people say that the letter is an artificial device for her to just unload a lot of information that vindicates Darcy. And one of the counter arguments I saw to that was that it says that Darcy wrote the letter in an uncharacteristic, you know, dreadful bitterness of spirit. But I find this really interesting because on some level it is like an info dump, which mm-hmm. is, you know, like a lot of the times you hear like show not tell the reader. But mm-hmm. I mean, he loves her. Like, he tells her he loves her. And I don't think that goes away just because she rejects his proposal and she's like mad at him in that moment. I feel like I can easily see this man who, like, he likes writing his thoughts down. So I don't think mm-hmm. it's unrealistic for someone who's kind of shy and reserved to just be more articulate in expressing their feelings through writing. I thought that was such an interesting critique. I never thought about that.
I mean, we live in a time where people have a hard time self-editing as they speak aloud because we're mainly text-based communication. We, you mm-hmm. know, we can edit and delete and, you know, unsend something sometimes depending on the medium. So it makes perfect sense to me. Like, I know I'm much more articulate when I can go through and reread what I've written and put it down. Although on paper, I suppose you have to scratch out a lot of stuff. So that makes... that actually still makes sense to me. And I don't remember the quote because I didn't take it down like a dum-dum. There was a point where Elizabeth, I think, even marveled, like, there was a lot he could have said that would be far more vindictive and really biased towards his side. And really, he could have trashed Wickham more and all of this. But she was kind of marveling at how very objective and like, here are the facts, here's what happened, this is maybe how I felt. And in the past, we have seen him reveal personal stuff. Like, he told Caroline that he fancied Elizabeth and thought she was beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like he was effusive about it. He's just like, yeah, no, she's gorgeous. Those are nice eyes.
The letter really works for me. It doesn't, I mean, I guess a very uncharacteristic reading of it is that it is a device, and it mm-hmm. is. Like, we're just getting a ton of information here. But I don't know how you show that. Like, I think the only way to impart this information is through this letter and he's only able to express it this way because they, like, tried talking it out and their emotions sort of got the better of them because they're both, like, mm-hmm. passionate people. So I never really questioned it as a device, even though it is. And I think what happens later, the fact that they separate Darcy and Elizabeth for so long after this, mm-hmm. and that's not even, like, spoiling anything because, like, we read 5 chapters for today and, you know, Darcy and Fitzwilliam wait for her to come back and they both miss her and then they leave Rosings. And it's like, well, when is she going to run into Darcy again? Like, there's no, like, defined future meeting point.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like they're meeting up alone all the time is something that would happen. They're mm-hmm. of different social class. So much communication is by letter in this time. I mean, just because it's a device doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. I think it's a device used fairly well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it doesn't read to me at all as, like, uncharacteristic of what we know about Darcy, that he would just be able to express himself better in a letter, that he would just trust her. Like, mm-hmm. he wanted to marry her. Like, he doesn't just say, like, I love you. Like, he wants to be with her forever. I just think that's so big that I think that he would trust her to not, like, air his dirty laundry around the town, or if she was going to do it in a thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm. That is a really good point, actually. He thinks so highly of who she is as a person and her character that he knows that if he tells her this, it's going to stay between them. It's not going to be, like, gossip fodder.
Yeah.
I like that.
No, I really wanted to talk about, like, the way that this comes across mm-hmm. in the story. And I never really thought of that critique before. I sort of took issue with it. and also a lot of the response to it, because I didn't think it seemed uncharacteristic of him. He's reserved and quiet, but I think he's just shy and awkward, and he admits to that.
And which, if anyone wants to write in and tell us by letter or by email what you think.
Yeah, no, I'm really curious what other people might think, because I never heard that. I mean, you know, I think we've covered how biased both of us are. Like, this is my favorite book. I read this a billion times. But even I'm like, there's stuff that happens in these chapters that we'll get to that I forgot happened. And I read this book like once a year.
Can you just imagine Elizabeth standing there while he told her all this? First of all, especially if he started with the Jane and Bingley stuff, she'd be like, no, I'm not listening. No.
No, she needed to come to her own. She needed to come to realize it on her own, I think.
Plus, it's like the power of words, guys.
Yeah, the power of reading. I'll be interested when we do the adaption episodes, because there's so many adaptions, how the different adaptions deal with this. Because you said right off the bat, before we even got into the meat of this discussion, how important displaying all the emotions and the rational progression that it takes to get to the point of the end of her reading and understanding the contents of the letter, and how difficult that would be to portray on screen. So that'll be something fun for us to talk about.
I think probably my only point of contention is the image of him being like, I'm going home. I'm so upset. I'm going to sit down and write this letter. Write with rage. Like, maybe he had to like go through a couple drafts, throw away a few sheets of paper first.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely picture him like hands all like ink, like dirty with ink, like scribbling like under the candlelight. Oh, like,
how? Okay. I just had an image of like ink on his fingers now.
Also, an underrated part of this chapter is at the end, they talk about how they both men had stopped by to say goodbye, and they said Colonel Fitzwilliam had been sitting with them for at least an hour hoping for a return, and Elizabeth could just affect concern in missing him. She really rejoiced. Colonel Fitzwilliam was no longer an object. She could think only of her letter.
I love that
so much. It's her letter.
Because at some point she's just, it's almost like confirmation that at some point she was like starting to think of Fitzwilliam maybe in that way. But now that door is closed. She's only got one Darcy on her mind.
I mean, and that's like the bulk of the chapter, but we do get this like very funny short chapter about like saying goodbye to Lady Catherine.
Oh, gosh.
And sorry, I didn't mean to move on. If you have more, we'll talk about the letter later.
No, you're good. The letter will keep coming. But
there's some like very funny moments in the chapter when they say goodbye to Lady Catherine.
Oh my goodness, Lady Catherine. She's just going to be her.
She goes, I believe nobody feels the loss of a friend as much as I do. Nobody loves music as much as I do. Like, I'm attached to these young men. Like, these men love me so much.
She just feels things so hard, you know?
She feels her delusions so hard, is I think what you're trying to say.
That is a whole other matter. And I love how she's like, oh, Fitzwilliam was able to put on a brave face, you know, like a like a real soldier. But Darcy, man, he took it so hard. He was just like, I really think he's getting more attached here, which is great because it's obviously going to be his future home when he marries my daughter. Oh, poor Darcy.
How delusional does she need to be to think that Darcy's going to like be with her daughter?
And then on top of that, she assumes that like Lizzie's mood is because she has to leave Rosings soon too. And why don't you ask if you could stay a bit longer? And Elizabeth's like, oh no, my dad, he really wants you back. Oh, your father, of course, may spare you if your mother can. Daughters are never of so much consequence to a father.
That's a kind of a burn.
Lady.
It's very funny, but it's also horrible. She's like, no, you need to stay like 2 more weeks. It's like she's staying at the Collins house. You're just like letting her stay another 2 weeks
at someone else's home. Well, she also says she wanted to take her to London as well. For something, some showy offy thing. But on top of that, she also starts going into like, oh, you need a manservant to come with you. She just really insinuates herself into all these plans.
Oh, I love her ladyship again inquired minutely into the particulars of their journey, gave them directions as to the best method of packing, and was so urgent on the necessity of placing gowns in the right way that Maria thought herself obliged on her return to undo all the work of the morning and pack her trunk afresh. This poor little girl is like, it's like, oh my God, like I packed all the wrong way. Like I have to repack.
I mean, relatable.
Yeah. I could tell you, I could teach you how to pack, Annie.
Yeah. I roll. I do roll.
Packing cubes is the way to go. That's like a PSA. You gotta get the cubes.
I do like the cubes. The cubes are great.
No, we have more talk about the letter, right? Because just to like inner feelings about it.
Yes, but I mean, for all her just general insanity, Lady Catherine is kind of a blessing because she's asking all these questions and Elizabeth isn't always the one answering the questions. So it kind of forced her to be present in the moment, and she could at least take a, you know, while if she had to be in these people's company, at least she didn't have to think about the letter. She could focus on something else. Because Mr. Darcy's letter, she was in a fair way of soon knowing by heart. She studied every sentence and her feelings towards its writer were at times wildly different. And the way it continues, it immediately made me think of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix when Hermione is explaining to the boys about how confused Cho Chang must be feeling about her feelings with Cedric, and now she likes Harry and she cannot work out who she likes best, and then she feels guilty because of Cedric and then kissing Harry, and then Harry was there when Cedric died and now she's with Harry, but what's happened? It just made me think of the whole thing being like, oh, this is familiar.
Oh, the and it's just, and Ron's like, wow, like you can, a girl really feels all those things. She's like, well, you have the emotional range of a teaspoon.
Exactly. I mean, yes. I don't want to discredit any men who also have feelings, but it's a thing for women to just have all the feelings all at once in a very confusing way.
No, I think she's really mad at herself still for just her judging for everything that she got wrong. She's still like very mad at herself. Although I do love how the chapter begins with like a hint of our favorite like sassy Elizabeth. She Elizabeth could not see Lady Catherine without recollecting that had she chosen it, she might by this time have been presented to her as her future niece, nor could she think without a smile of what her ladyship's indignation would have been.
Ah, that's a girl.
Even though she's like really upset and like thinking about all these things and like blaming herself, part of her is still like, if I had said yes, what would have been? Like, you would have been so mad.
I would have upturned your entire world, lady.
It's such a good like moment that like reminds us like, oh yeah, Elizabeth the Czar is an asshole a little bit in the best way.
In a fun way. Which, no, in the best she way, gets from her dad a little bit.
Oh yeah, the enjoying of other people's like misfortunate feelings. Yeah, that's all her dad.
I believe the word is schadenfreude.
Yeah.
So at some point she's, like you said, she's not feeling too keen on her own reaction. And at some point she says she doesn't feel the slightest inclination ever to see him, Darcy, again, because she's so embarrassed of her reaction and how she misjudged him and misjudged the whole situation. But she also like takes a moment to look at her family, and she says they were hopeless of remedy. Her father contended with laughing at them, would never exert himself to restrain the wild giddiness of his youngest daughters. Her mother, with manners so far from right herself, was entirely insensible of the evil. And I'm just like, they're a mess. Her family's a mess, but they're her mess.
Which she calls like Lydia and Catherine, Kate and Kitty, ignorant, idle, and vain. Which like they are. But oh my gosh. Still, it's like they're your sisters. Like, chill.
Family, man. Family. Yeah. Which, I mean, at the very least, I think Darcy would appreciate, as is his own loyalty to his sister.
No, it's true. It's interesting that she doesn't even let herself for a second feel bad that she said no to him. Mm-hmm. I think she just, she couldn't for a moment repent her refusal or feel the slightest inclination to ever see him again. That seems a little, the lady doth protest too much a bit. But I think you nailed it in that it's not so much that she doesn't want to see him again, or like she's not mad that she rejected him because she like hates him still. It's that she's so embarrassed and she's about her actions and her family. So
it's a hell of a reminder of that time you were really dumb.
It's very interesting how she doesn't let herself dwell on what if I had said yes.
Mm-hmm. Except to make fun of Lady Catherine.
Yeah, of course. Well, obviously, that's acceptable. Meanwhile, I would have been like, what if I said yes?
Oh my gosh. But Elizabeth is going to be all Elizabeth and immediately starts turning her thoughts to Jane. And she's like, how grievous it then, because like she's realizing like, oh, that means that everything about how Bingley appeared to feel about Jane was real. And she thinks how grievous then was the thought that of a situation so desirable in every respect, so replete with advantage, so promising for happiness, Jane had been deprived, and by the folly and indecorum of her own family.
It's so harsh. You feel really bad.
For all her loyalty to her family, she's just like, we did this. I can't even fully blame Darcy. I mean, she still can't. She super still can, in my opinion, because he's still a snob. Mm-hmm. But
it's interesting that we also get this like two-page chapter fit in here that's almost entirely a conversation between Mr. Collins and Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And you have Elizabeth, like, she didn't really want to see Charlotte, but she was like, fine, and she dragged her feet, but then she was happy to see her friend. And when she's leaving, she spent 6 weeks, it says there, mm-hmm. she's like, oh, I really enjoyed spending time with Charlotte. Like, this was nice.
Yeah.
And you have this, like, very superficial conversation that she has with Mr. Collins, where he says all these things, you know, that we know aren't true. You know, like, my dear Charlotte and I have but one mind and one way of thinking. We seem to have been designed for each other. And you have Elizabeth sort of kind of coming around to her sister, or to Charlotte's way of thinking. You know, like, she had chosen it with her eyes open. She didn't ask for compassion. You know, her house hasn't, you know, is very charming. She has, like, her things. And you have this moment of growth for her, I think. Like, she realizes, okay, I judged a little harshly. I still don't like Mr. Collins. Like, he's still, like, an idiot. But he's treating her well. Her house is nice. Like, she seems fine. I can leave now with my friendship with Charlotte restored and my faith in her. And it's sort of just, like, a nice moment and of character development, I think, for her.
And it's such a nice turnaround because she didn't judge Wickham for marrying someone for a more, like, advantageous situation, but she really held it against Charlotte for doing the same exact thing, and now she switched on both. I love that a lot. You're like, oh, the friendship. And I mean, one, I think the chapter in general serves as a nice break from all the drama and all the thinking and everything, but it's also kind of like it's a nice closing of that one chapter of their lives and them being okay, because it did suck when they were at odds. Plus, it gave Collins a chance not to be, I mean, he's still tedious and an idiot, as you said, but it was nice to see him seem to sincerely try to be pleasant to Elizabeth and not completely put on airs. I mean, there's a little bit in the airs in the way he's talking about, you know, how humble they are. But he says such nice things to her, like, the favor of your company has been much felt, I assure you. We know how little there is to tempt anyone to our humble abode. And even though he does, you know, say, like, I wish you, you know, as much was it felicitude of marriage as ours, it's not super I mean, we know it's not that happy, but at the same time, it is him trying to say something nice. And I like that.
Yeah, it's not a redemption necessarily, but it's a moment for us as the reader and for Elizabeth. You know, Elizabeth has had this big shock. We've had less of a shock because I don't think we hate Darcy or trust Wickham as much as Elizabeth does. But she had this big turnaround where she realized that a lot of her assumptions had been wrong and a lot of her judgments had been based on prejudice and vanity. And so you have this moment here where she has an opportunity to learn from her past mistakes. And it's like, yeah, Mr. Collins is giving her an opportunity here to, like, laugh at him and acknowledge that he's a fool and that he's wrong and silly and that Charlotte made a mistake, but she doesn't do that. She doesn't indulge that impulse. Instead, she kind of looks at it from her friend's point of view and is able to be like, yeah, I had a very nice time. Thank you very much for your hospitality. Like, it looks like my friend's okay here. She's being treated fine. She's not suffering. Like, I can leave here happy and satisfied. And it sort of marks, like, the first moment of, like, growth for her after this, like, letter turning point that we keep talking about.
It's good. It's a good moment.
It is good. And it's also, there's that funny when Mariah's like, we've dined at Rosings 9 times, you know, like, and drank tea there twice. Like, how much I shall have to tell? And Elizabeth's like, how much I shall have to conceal? And then we meet up with Lydia and Kitty.
Minus Mary, who just doesn't get mentioned.
Yeah, Mary didn't want to come, we find out later. But Lydia and Kitty decided to be helpful and meet them, like, halfway, or meet them and treat them, but they have to lend them the money because Lydia spent all of theirs at the shop.
Might as well buy it. I love how the thought of, like, I guess I won't get it just doesn't occur to her.
Oh my god, it's so funny. I always forget that this is, like, actually in the book, and she's like, oh, I bought this bonnet. I don't think it's very pretty, but I thought I might as well buy it.
She has mixed priorities, I think, is the nicest possible way that we could say
it? You know, is if we need like another example of like all the ways that Lydia is like really flighty and wasteful.
And later on, when she's telling the Bennets about all their little adventures once they get back home, she's just like, oh, it was so great. We had a nice time. I bought this beautiful hat. Then we treated the other ones because we are so amazing.
Yeah. It comes like right after Darcy had just like wrote that letter being like, your family sucks. And Elizabeth is like, my family doesn't suck. And then...
I mean, maybe a little. Yeah. I can say they suck. But if someone else says they suck, I'm not going to be happy about it.
That's simplifying it. But yeah.
It really is. And I want to be like, well, maybe they're not that bad. Then this episode comes roaring on in and they're like, no, they're actually really, really obnoxious and exhausting. And I don't remember all teenagers being like this.
No, but we do get some gossip, don't we, Lydia?
Lydia's good for... something. Like getting the hot info.
Yeah, well, we find out our good friend Mr. Wickham has been spared the affections of Mrs. King because she's gone off to live with her uncle at Liverpool, and Wickham is safe.
Yeah, and of course it's like no big deal for him, as if he wasn't the one who was going after the woman with all this money. But Lydia's very... she's got a skewed perspective on this. Mm-hmm. She says, I'm sure there's not strong attachment on his part, on Wickham's part. I will answer for it. He never cared three straws about her. Who'd care about such a nasty little freckled thing? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Lydia.
Very hard to like her after all that.
Yeah.
Even Lizzie seemed like shocked to hear her talk like that too.
And then they called Jane an old maid because she's like 23.
Yeah, she just hopes never to be so embarrassed to not be married at the age of 23.
Lord, how I should like to be married before any of you. Lydia, just calm down.
She's...
a lot, yeah.
She's pushing that family. She's a lot. She's pushing that, like, familial, unconditional love thing, isn't she?
Yeah, and then they have to, like, shove into the carriage for, like, the rest of the way, and it's, like, super packed with all their packages, and they're, like, fighting, and it's awful.
She seems really pleased, too, to be taking up more space because she has this extra hat box as well. Oh, God, I hope I was never like that.
I know. I know. Is it just, like, another example? Like, do we need another example of Lydia and Kitty by association kind of being awful? Or do we get this because it comes, like, right after Darcy sends that letter?
I don't know. I have a thought that is spoilery, so I'll save it for another time. But
yeah,
the whole time I'm just looking at this thinking, Mrs. Bennet, this is your fault. This right here.
Yeah, well, then they get back and Mrs. Bennet's just like even worse than before, right? She's like only happy because Jane is undiminished in beauty.
Do you think maybe it's because she's accepting that the marriage didn't happen, isn't going to happen, that Jane is just getting older and she's getting more despairing at the singlehood of her daughters? Or is she just being herself?
She's just sort of being herself. But then, and then we get like Mr. Bennet, who's not even better. He just says, oh, I'm glad that you're back. That's like it. That's all we get of like the great Mr. Bennet. Oh, he's so funny and charming. It's like, no, he's a jerk also.
And Lydia is telling anyone and everyone who listened to her or even pretend to listen to her what all they did. Like I said, she talked about how generous they were to treat her sisters with their own money. I think at some point she tells Mary, like, oh, too bad you missed all the fun. And Mary just says, but I confess they would have no charms for me. I should infinitely prefer a book, which is highly relatable.
Yeah, but when Mary says it, it comes off worse for some reason.
It is. It does seem a little petty.
Condescending?
Mm-hmm. Is she just a snob? Is her snobbishness protective?
I mean, I feel like she's, like, the least, like, attractive of all the sisters, so she, like, has to find her own, like, niche thing, and so she is, like, the smart one is, like, sort of the mantle that she's taken up, but at the same time, she's not maybe that much smarter, or...
Yeah, she's kind of being a snob about
it.
But at the same time, I feel like if my sister came in, she's like, you would have had so much fun and I would have treated you and it would have been great. I probably would be like, it doesn't sound like
that's fun. That's true.
I would be a snob.
That's too. A good point. And in it, so in addition to the news that Miss King is gone, we also get news that the regiment is leaving. They're going to Brighton. So Wickham is leaving, and Elizabeth is like pretty happy about it.
How tragic for Lydia, though.
Well, I do feel for her. Like, all the, like, the eligible, like, handsome men are gone. So, like, I am willing to have some empathy for her to that respect.
Enough so that you would you, like, do you really understand the very serious consideration of, can we spend the summer near them? Can we go to Brighton where the men are gonna be?
And I like that Mr. Bennett is, like, definitely not gonna say yes, but his answers are just, like, really vague, so everyone just keeps asking him.
He just loves messing with him so much. So while all that's going on, Elizabeth finally finds some time, and I guess some courage maybe, to finally tell Jane what happened. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really want to talk about the whole Bingley stuff.
Like,
really?
Like, oh, your family ruined this for you, Jane. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jane's slowly starting to get over it, maybe, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So why bring it up that, like, some misunderstanding ruined all your happiness forever? So what does Jane say about Darcy?
This is very interesting because I always forget that Elizabeth tells Jane, because she keeps it such a secret from everybody, that mm-hmm. I always forget that she tells her. But when she does, it's such a great scene, and it really highlights, like, how close the sisters are. Because Jane is surprised, but she also is, like, understanding, because, of course, like, he loves Elizabeth, because Elizabeth is great, because Elizabeth is her sister. It's, like, very adorable uh-huh. and, like, lovely.
She feels sorry for him that yeah. he got refused by her amazing sister.
And she feels sorry for everyone.
But also she's like, ah, it's okay.
Yeah, she's, like, trying to feel bad for everyone, and Elizabeth has to finally be like, Jane, listen, you can't feel bad for Wickham and Darcy. But she's like, there's just enough goodness in them to make, like, one okay person.
At the same time, she's just like, well, I kind of understand why you refused him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like you said, she feels sorry for everyone. So very bad.
What a stroke this was for poor Jane, who would willingly have gone through the world without believing that so much wickedness existed in the whole race of mankind as was here collected in one individual. That's, like, so biting almost. Poor Jane, to even have to hear that there's someone so horrible that exists in this world.
To be so disillusioned. And it does kind of remind me, you know, of, like, Bingley earlier in the book, where he is just like, I mean, I know bad things happen and there are people who do bad things, but I'm kind of okay with just being me and going through this world the way I do.
Can you imagine going through the world as Jane? Like, at one point she says, you know, poor Wickham, he looks so good. He's so nice. and Elizabeth has to be like, yeah, well, one has all the goodness and the other is all the appearance of it.
How are you just not constantly disillusioned and disappointed by the world if you're Jane?
I know, but she's so lovely. It's such a good scene that really highlights, like, how good of a person Jane is, and mm-hmm. how Elizabeth has to be like, okay, reality check.
I appreciate that this is something that Elizabeth really admires about her sister, because mm-hmm. you kind of get the sense that her cynicism comes a lot from her intelligence and awareness. Mm-hmm. But I don't think at any point it's just like, well, Jane's kind of a sweet, beautiful dum-dum.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
like, mm-hmm. I just wish, you know, it must be so nice being Jane. I don't want to be Jane, but it's so nice. Just, I want to protect her and love her and want every bit of happiness for her.
And she doesn't just come to Jane to be like, guess who proposed to me? Like, she wants Jane's advice. Like, what should I do? Should I tell everyone that Wickham is a creeper?
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Yeah, and they have, like, a very well thought out kind of discussion about it, where they go back and forth and they ultimately decide that they're not going to do it. And the reason they don't want to do it is because Darcy didn't really say that they could, and that everyone in the town already hates Mr. Darcy so much anyway. And who cares, because Wickham's leaving. He's, like, out of our hands. Like, we can just, like, let it be.
Yeah, there's, like, a kind of unspoken protection of Georgiana and her reputation, and not letting anyone find out about that, because that wouldn't be good for her either. And afterwards, they're just like, yeah, well, you know, when everyone else finds out about it, we'll just laugh at how we knew all along.
Do you think this is a good idea on their part? Do you think they should tell anybody?
I mean, on the one hand, it's like, so many people who, like, really revered Wickham for the same reasons that Elizabeth did, because he was just so good looking and affable, and seemingly affable at least. But I respect the decision to protect the Darcys because, I mean, we talked about it before. It probably took a lot for Darcy to reveal that much just to Elizabeth in a letter and trust that she wouldn't share it. So I do like that.
I don't know if they were left with a choice, really.
And it's not like you could just, like, you kind of want to share with the rest of the family because a lot of them are like, oh, poor you, you lost out on Wickham. But at the same time, like, they are such chatty Cathys.
No. And Wickham is, like, they have no proof without airing, like, all of Darcy's, like, laundry out there. It feels, like, icky, sort of, because, like, he's such a bad dude and, like, he's a predator, you know? So he could, like, strike again, and he almost did with Miss King, right? Like, that was such a similar situation. But they're like, well, he's gone to Brighton, he's out of our hands. So it is like a deferring of responsibility that feels a little bit icky, I guess, but I also, like, probably in their shoes would have done the same thing.
Well, yeah, despite Lydia just constantly talking about Wickham and how great he is, and oh, I'm so glad that he managed to save himself from that awful and boring fate with Mary
the
King.
The freckly Mary King.
The nasty freckly mess that she is. I don't know. I'd be tempted, certainly, around that time, being like, can we stop talking about him because he's the worst?
And I mean, after that, we really just get another look at how unhappy Jane is.
Poor Jane. Because she is so precious and pure, she's feeling the pain still. It's terrible, but I did laugh when Mrs. Bennet was like, well, he is a very undeserving young man, which is, you know, loyalty, family, that's wonderful. And I do not suppose there is the least chance in the world of her ever getting him now. She continues to say, nobody wants him to come, though I shall always say, use my daughter extremely ill, and if I was her, I would not have put up with it. Well, my comfort is, I am sure Jane will die of a broken heart, and then he will be sorry for what he has done.
How many of us, Kevin, thought that? You know, like, oh, like, won't he be sorry?
He'll be sorry something happens to me. That's just, like, a terrible...
Like, what if I got so hit by a car tomorrow? Now. Like, wouldn't he be sorry then? Like, it's such a dark thought that I think, like, all of us have thought at some point. Like,
isn't that what happens in season one of Fleabag?
Oh, my God. Yes, that's exactly what happens. Ugh.
But at the same time, you're like, that would require your beloved, beautiful, favorite daughter to die? Because that's apparently that's all women can do at the time. Get married or die.
Oh, God. Is that really how you want to end this? That's not the last, like, sentence of these chapters.
Well, we could end with more of Mrs. Bennet's continued hilarious
rantings,
pettiness. Because she's talking about the Collinses, and she sounds like she's actually, like, accepted what happened with the Collinses and Charlotte. But at the same time, and I have this as, like, my one single burn that I really pulled out, it was, she says, and so the Collinses live very comfortable, do they? Well, well, I only hope it will last. And what sort of table do they keep? Charlotte is an excellent manager, I dare say. This all sounds really, really nice and complimentary. But she continues to say, if she is half as sharp as her mother, she is saving enough. There is nothing extravagant in their housekeeping, I dare say.
That's a passive-aggressive burn that I totally just read over, but I love it.
We haven't had one of those in a while.
That's a good one. I didn't even mark. I only had one burn too, but that one's really good. I like it.
All right. Why didn't you share your burn with
us? Yeah, my burn was in chapter 40, and I think we kind of talked about it. When they decide not to tell the town about Wickham, they say, sometime hence it will all be found out, and then we may laugh at their stupidity and not knowing before, which is so mean.
I mean, it's kind of nice, like, oh, they have their own little secret and they could have fun, but at the same time, it's still about some guy trying to ruin some other girl's life.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, we may laugh at their stupidity. It's like, how would they know? Like, you guys were tricked by Wickham also.
I know. Is this like some semblance of what little power they have in this patriarchal society?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame them. I mean, they're like sisters, like, gossiping. Like, I don't blame them at all. Like, totally. Like, I would laugh at people's stupidity all the time. So,
do you think maybe, like, you said about how they fell for it too? Do you think it's also kind of protective on their part to be like, well, let's not anyone find out that we fell for the same thing for this. You know, we fell for the same trap with this incredibly good-looking dude.
No, that's a really good point. I think that's exactly it.
Well, Mr. Wickham. who is off to Brighton, hopefully for good.
Brighton's really nice. It's like seaside. Like, I would like to spend this summer at Brighton. Maybe not this summer, but like a summer at Brighton. It's like beautiful.
Is that the one with like all the cute little changing huts and everything?
I think so, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. We're just ignorant Americans. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all on an island.
Yeah, no, it's very cute, like seaside. If we're wrong, someone will tell us, but I prefer to believe that. We should all spend the summer at Brighton.
Yes, well, like you said, not this summer. Mostly it's me staring at the pool outside my back window going, oh, one day.
The chlorine will probably kill everything, right?
The chlorine will kill any germies in the water, but it's personally, I have a concern with all the parts where I have to breathe.
Yes, breathing is rough. That's true. Thank you.
That's the slight problem yes. we have. All right. Well, so that was a fun couple of chapters, wasn't it?
I know. So what are you looking forward to seeing next? Like, I feel like we had the big climax sort of. So, I don't know. I mean, I want Darcy and Elizabeth to meet up again, but I kind of, like, when would they? Like, we don't really have any events on the horizon to look forward to, really.
He was only in the area because of Bingley, who is not back and who is now in London. He doesn't seem to have business with anyone else there in the area. What else? And we have, what, 16 chapters left?
Yeah, I mean, clearly something's going to happen, but we don't know what
Stuff's going to happen. Because, I mean, there's still some open storylines here that we have. Jane is still miserable. Mm-hmm. I wonder if anything ever happens. Does Mary ever get anything, or is there always just going to be one sister who just doesn't really have a story?
I mean, Mary's happy with her books, Anne. Don't judge her.
I don't, but at some point, she's going to get kicked out of that house, her and her books. I worry.
I always thought, like, her and Mr. Collins should hook up, but he's happy with Charlotte, so maybe they know some, like, other eligible priests out there.
Well, I mean, that's the hope. You get one married and mm-hmm. they introduce you to a whole new part of society full of eligible bachelors who happen to like slightly bookish, slightly awkward middle children.
Yes, well.
What are you looking forward to?
I mean, I want...
Or hoping to see.
I mean, I'd love like a confrontation between Elizabeth and Darcy post-letter. Like, I really, like, I want to see that because they both are kind of humbled at this point. So you'd hope that there'd be less, like, fire in a bad way between them.
Now that they've come to, like, an understanding.
Yeah. That would be sort of what I would hope. I don't really need to see Wickham again.
That'd be good. No, I'm okay with not encountering that man. I mean, we still have 5 unmarried Bennets.
That's true. I'd like at least half of them to be married at some point. Is that so much to wish for?
That I mean, we do love a double wedding.
Oh, who doesn't love a double wedding? It is like in all Shakespeare's comedies, they like end with a wedding.
Absolutely.
Double weddings, yeah.
It saves money, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
What else? Maybe Mrs. Bennet will finally calm down.
That's almost too much to wish for.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I feel like as long as Mary's around, maybe she'll always have something to fret about.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so... Next time, we'll be reading chapters 41 to 45. We're getting closer to the end, as we talked about. Oh, I'm so excited.
Me too.
And then we'll have the adaptations to look forward to after that. We'll start working, figuring out what... There's so many that we can watch for this.
Yeah, and there's no reason to like not do one that we particularly want to do. So we'll talk about it. And if anyone has one that they want us for sure to cover, I mean, we're obviously going to do the Jewel Wright movie and the miniseries. Mm-hmm. But there are lots of others in book form, in TV form.
In YouTube form.
Yeah. So let us know if there's one in particular that you want us to cover. And we'll announce it well ahead in time so you have time to watch along with us.
All right. Until next time, guys, you can find us at thedailynightly.com, on Twitter at nightlypod, or on Instagram, which has been woefully neglected, at thedailynightly.
Yeah, Annie.
Yeah. You can also send us an email with all your thoughts or any questions at thedailynightly@gmail.com. Jesse, it's a pleasure as always.
Hey, this was lovely. I'm glad to be in this with you, and I hope that you stay safe.
You too, my dear. Take care, everyone.
Bye. Happy reading.
Happy reading.